Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Excited to be with you guys for the next hour or so. Got lots to talk about because there's three shows back to back to back. It all starts tonight with PFL 2021 Week 8. So it's the second week of a three-week run where the PFL is having their playoffs. We also got Bellator on Friday. So that's tomorrow. It's Bellator 265. Congo versus Karatanov. They're in South Dakota, by the way. Sioux Falls, if you're in the area, head on down. And, of course, we got UFC on ESPN 29. Cannoneer versus Gastelum. That's your main event. So back-to-back-to-back nights for the three biggest promotions, arguably, in the sport. One championship may have a problem with what I just said, but they also got some shows to close out the end of the year. Maybe they'll prove me wrong. Of course, we'll go over the latest news as well. Brendan Schaub, a hero out in California, rescuing three kids from a car crash scene. So that was pretty crazy because there was a head-on collision, a fatality that he recognized, and some gasoline that was leaking. So very, very heroic by the former UFC heavyweight. Mark Madsen, boy, talk about what he's going through. A lot since his last fight. Broken jaw, a couple surgeries, wife going through, she's fighting MS disease, and a lot more stuff involving his house. Dana White tells us Trajan Gore is out of his fight. We'll tell you who his replacement is, and of course, lots more. We're just going to start off the MMA Junkie Show here on a Thursday, August 19th.
How about that? New intro. Did you like the new intro, George, by the way?
I did, yeah. Thank you to Adam Fish. Thank you to Goes. And, you know, a shout-out to the big boss. No, I'm not smooching his ass. It was actually kind of his idea to freshen things up. Chris Perrone. Simon Samano, also in the mix, as always. Thank you to everybody. All right, listen, Goes, let's start off with some news, and then we'll finish out laying out each event one by one by one. PFL, Bellator, UFC, back to back to back this weekend. I was reading up on Brendan Schaub and that story out in California, a little bit north of L.A. You know, he used to be a Venice Beach boy, but I think now that he started a family, he lives down in Encino, Calabasas, where the rich people live. He says he was driving with his girlfriend to dinner, and they came upon a crash involving a semi-truck and what looked like to be a family van or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty hairy situation, man. Glass shattered everywhere, a lot of wreckage. But as they pulled up, they saw a kid, I believe, on top of the van. And, you know, a lot of people see accidents and drive by. They don't know what's happened up until that point. You know, usually there's a couple people standing outside. And this is in the event that the authorities haven't showed up, you know, the firefighters, EMT, police. But he said he saw that kid and he said, I got to get into action. He said for a half second he considered he's got his own family to think about. But something about that situation knew he had to go in there and act. And he wound up saving those kids, sending them in the direction where they couldn't see their mom because he said the mom was obviously dead. Brains had been splattered and scattered, and it was ugly. You know, in fact, he went so far as to say that he told another bystander to grab a blanket and just cover the mom. Didn't want to traumatize the kids, but man, Goes, that sent chills up my spine when I was reading that article.
I think everybody always wonders what they would be like in that situation, but I think deep down inside, you kind of know the answer. I don't know that there's. Like, I understand what Brendan's saying, like, I got to remember my family and all that, but I think really at the core of us, we've already made up our mind before we've gone through all that, because there's just a certain something inside you, I think, that just not everybody, but if you do have that where you just can't bear to see, especially kids in pain and all that, then you'll do some pretty crazy shit, especially for your family. You know, I've heard of people jumping into water to save somebody drowning when they don't know how to swim. You know, there's just something that kicks in inside of you. And I think Brendan probably has that. And, you know, thank God that he did have that, because that doesn't always happen. And every second of that situation is dangerous for those kids going forward. Like you said, covering up the mom, like there's just so many things that little things that can happen that can stay with you your whole life. So props to Brendan Schaub for doing that. That was pretty amazing.
You've seen the movie Crash, right? It won an Academy Award for Best Picture about 15 years ago. It almost reminded me of the scene where Matt Dillon comes up on that lady who I believe he had gone so far as to frisk, to piss off the husband. He got handsy in a frisk days, weeks before. I don't know the time. I don't remember the timeline of the story. But he now pulls up on her, and when she realizes it's him, you know, the car's flipped upside down. He can smell the oil leaking from another car. But she's frightened. She's actually traumatized at seeing his face. But he manages to calm her down and tell her, I got to get you out of here or this car is going to blow up. So when he mentioned gasoline, I was thinking something similar to that, you know, where you kind of have to be really calm, cool, collected. Matt Dillon had another problem in that he had to calm her down and said, is it all right if I reach across and touch you? Because she was strapped in from the seatbelt. So he managed to calm her down. He did what he needed to do, pull her out. And then, of course, you know, dramatic scene, explosion right afterwards. But I was almost thinking of something similar. So let's put ourselves on the spot. How do you think you would have acted?
I think without a doubt, just about in any situation, I've always thought about it. I'm pretty sure I would just act, you know, even if it's like an alligator grabs a hold of you or, you know, something like that. Even the scariest of things, a bear, all that stuff. Because, you know, I did Enson Anyways podcast this weekend, and he said something that really hit home. And he said, because we were talking about situations where he's done pretty crazy things, and he said what it comes down to is he feels like later in life, the pain of not doing something and not helping out is going to be worse than whatever I'm going to go through in that situation. And some people are wired that way. And I think I'm one of those people that's wired that way. Sitting there thinking, could I have saved my brother? You know, how many times do people get in there with alligators and alligators just go away or whatever? I'd be thinking all that stuff.
And I'm curious about the bear. If a bear's got a hold of me, are you standing about 20 feet away going woo-woo-woo-woo-woo to distract them to run to you, kind of like a rodeo clown? Or are you actually going in there and socking them up or trying to put them in a rear naked choke to free me up? what are you doing?
I think I would run and just deliver like it's a kickoff, an NFL kickoff. One of those to like his ribs or something, you know, and just hope I can break something. Now, if he just kind of like rushes off and looks at me like, what was that? You know, then yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm going in there for round two. You have to do the math in your head and just know, all right, if somebody's goose is cooked, their goose is cooked. There's nothing I can do. But yeah. I think it's just that feeling of knowing I have to at least try, you know, but I'm also not going to, I don't want mom and dad to know that they lost two sons, right? But you'd have to do that math in your head. You know what I mean? Like, it is
mom's calling. Do anything. Well, I didn't want you to lose two sons, so I just mitigated the
damage. Oh, yeah. Like, if you're laying there and you've got a gigantic gash across your chest that I know you ain't coming back from that, then, yeah, I'm probably not going to sit there and try and fight the bear. At that point, then I think I need to get to safety, you know? But if you're still there kind of moving around trying to get out, then yeah, you gotta keep doing whatever you gotta do to that stupid bear.
I don't know if I like this, man. I think unless you touch my pulse and see that I'm out, you gotta fight, because you never know. Imagine if you went and retreated and then a few hours go by and then you go, hey, what's that ambulance for? And they go, man, some hiker found some dude that was on his deathbed. It looked like he was dead, but it turned out he was still breathing. And he picked them up and carried them a la Misha Tate style and called the ambulance. And then they saved me. How are you going to feel that then?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You'd have to look at the situation and be pretty certain that, like, if it's something horrific, then yeah. But
I will say this. I think I'm pretty much on par. You just cannot let. I mean, yeah, the closer the people are to you, I think the more heroic you're definitely going to be. But in this particular case, I don't want to lie to the audience. When he said the kids were on top, that clinched it. I'm getting out. You know what I mean? There was no one there. So I'm one of the first on the scene, and there's kids on top. Yeah, I'm going to see what's what. And I'm probably doing that regardless of the gasoline that was there or not. Like I don't know. I remember a few years ago, I saw a couple kids fighting, and I parked my car and went over there and broke them up because I know kids will play and fight, but I also know there's like a little cement area or brick area. God, man, imagine if a kid bumps their head and that's that. So I went over there, broke them up, and then gave them MMA Junkie Radio t-shirts and said, if you want to fight, go train to fight, but to defend yourself, you know? And, but
you never know. That could have changed the kid's life. You never know. That could have changed the kid's life.
You never know. Yeah.
So many times in life with athletes.
There was a little hero that day too, because the two that were fighting, when some parents showed up, and when we finally dove in to what the deal was about, one of the kids that was fighting was actually backing up a kid that was getting picked on. And a few of the kids corroborated that story because, you know, you don't just believe the first kid, right? And then you could tell right away who the bad kid was. That guy was a pile of lies. That guy was – oh, it was so frustrating, goes, because they were like, well, why were you fighting him, you know? And he goes – he said, the kid just came up to me. He was mad because I threw his shoes over the fence. And the kid was like, well, yeah, why are you throwing the kid's shoes over? Why? No, his shoes over the fence, his green shoes over the fence or something like that. And then they go, well, why'd you throw his green shoes over the fence? He goes, they weren't green, they were blue. And the kids and the parents are like, that's not the point. Like, why'd you just throw the shoes? But you said they were green and they're blue. You know, you're lying too. And
I was
trying to get to the crux of the story. But here's another one I thought about. I was driving with Juliet, and this was in the middle of the pandemic at its worst, when we knew very little about it. So basically, we all stayed away from each other. But I did see two dogs tangling up, and one of them was a little girl, and the other one was an older lady. The little girl couldn't control her dog. So as I was driving, I saw it, and I immediately stopped, put the car in park, and I wanted to get out, and Juliet grabbed my arm. Not because don't get involved in people's business, but more because of Corona. I had no mask, and, you know, I was in the middle of the street. So, like, that's the last time I think of something where I had that instinct, you know, to my end. So what I was thinking at that time was that little girl can't control that dog. You know, and luckily, by the time I looked at her and go, God, look at the little girl, they were already starting to separate it. And so everything was fine and we went. But I don't want to say Juliet is anti getting involved. There's a few times where you feel like you do want to mind your own business. You know, if just there's a domestic dispute, I mean, every time you hear the neighbors or something like that, you're not going to always go and investigate that. But I remember Juliet once, I know kind of what her reaction is like. She actually took Max for a night or a weekend. I can't remember. She's probably told you the story. She brings him in to the house. He's meeting her mom. And because they had just been on a long trip, she said, okay, let's go outside and pee. And when he went out, he was starting to get older. So I think his eyesight wasn't as good. Boom, he went straight into the pool. And her first instinct was, what? And even though she knows that Jack Russell can swim, and she had her phone in her pocket, it didn't matter. She went in fully clothed, you know? So she probably had enough time to really take the phone out of her pocket and take, you know, her clothes off because she was at home. But she didn't. She jumped straight in. And I go, why didn't you at least take off your phone or your wallet? Or not a wallet, but I guess the phone. And her keys. That was the other one. She was, because Max, I had fallen in the pool. Like, that was my only reaction, was he had fallen in the pool. And she goes, I know he could swim, but it was just your reaction. So you're right. There's like this gravitational pull of, you're either in or you're out, you know? Now, I will say this. If I come up on that accident and I don't see the kids, I can't look you in the eye and go, I'd still pull over. I think I might just go, oh, wow, that's an accident. But it would depend on, again, if there's a group of people already standing to the side, you know how you can tell they're exchanging info or taking pictures, someone's on their cell phone. So I guess maybe if I don't see that, then who knows? Maybe I'm driving real slow and looking to see if, you know, what can be done. But, God, you learn so much as you get older, you know. Would you even want to move a body? In doing so, are you making an injury worse? Obviously, the brain scattered lady, that was it. But someone that might be injured, what do? You know, I can't remember all that. So I would hope that I'm hearing a siren coming, you know, or maybe there's someone with more knowledge than me there. But that one, I'd have to see.
You have to be aware of your mortality. Like, I have probably like a very selfish opinion on this, but I'm not really afraid to die. Okay. And it's not because I'm this badass or anything like that. It's because I've lived a really cool life. You know, in talking to my friends, my family, my girlfriend, her family, when topics get brought up, I have a lot to say. I've done a lot of things, a lot of weird things. You know, I've lived a really good life for only being 42. So, yeah, there's a couple things I've missed out on. But if I were to die today, I would feel like, man, I did something in life. You know, I was able to do some really cool things. And that's maybe selfish because I have to remember that I'm leaving people behind as well. You know, yourself, mom and dad, my girlfriend, other family members. But maybe I have that selfish mentality where that's one of the reasons why I would probably jump in and try and save you, or because, I'm afraid to get eaten and bitten and all that's going to – I have fear of the pain that can come with maybe burning alive or something like that. But actually dying, I don't really have it. And it's because I feel like I've done a lot in this world. And I feel like I've made a difference in the world. So that's kind of another thing that I think people battle through every day and try and figure out, you know, where are you at in life? I think people in that split second sometimes can do all of those equations, but they don't realize that they've probably already done them in their head.
Yeah. So every year when we're getting close to September 11th, there's going to be specials, right? And you see the plane going into the Twin Towers, people running in the street, all those images and videos. But one that I can't stop thinking about is what it would have been like to be a firefighter that gets the call. And as you get there, you assess. The one thing you're pretty sure of is elevators ain't working. And so now you're going up a lot of steps with heavy equipment in an environment that's filled with a lot of smoke, you know? And I wonder what those guys were thinking. Like, seriously, I'm going up a lot of flight of stairs. This is the one time it don't look good, you know? But they went, you know, they marched up there and did what they could, you know, to bring bodies down or assist in people getting down. And obviously some people they couldn't get to. And then some of them maybe died from the smoke inhalation, or maybe that's when the building came down. I don't know. Before whatever reason, I always just think of the fire department and what they thought of, kind of almost like a similar feeling to Armageddon when they're going into the what was the other one?
Deep Impact.
Is that the one where a group of them actually flies into the meteor and then it blows up?
Yeah.
Whereas Bruce Willis in Armageddon is left behind and he does it himself, right? But the other one, they knew, we're going to do this. And kind of like that type of a mission, we're going towards mm-hmm. our death. And I feel like the firemen were doing that as well in September 11th. And there's by the way, if people like that type of stuff, like documentaries, National Geographic on Sunday, mm-hmm. the 29th or whatever it comes out to. Let me see. The 22nd, the 29th. Yeah. National Geographic says they're going to have a 6-part series. So it can't be weekly, because I would imagine they would want it to culminate on the 11th or somewhere around that time. But maybe it'll be every day for a week. I don't know. But I plan on TiVoing it and recording it.
I think they've done one before that was pretty damn good. So yeah. I was thinking just the other day in the news, you know, what's going on in Afghanistan, which goes back to, again, like we've had weird lives. Like we were there at some of those places, you know what I mean? And just seeing that was a reminder of how are these troops going to handle that situation. And I have an answer for you, because I was there when a base got attacked and I saw how they all acted. And you ever see like in a kid fight, like a schoolyard fight or something, you know, you got to be there at a certain time and a kid's trying to delay it by as much as he can by tying his shoelaces or whatever. Hey, let me take this shirt off because my mom will get mad if I rip it.
No rings.
Yeah. They did none of that, right? When that happened, everybody was running to their post. Everybody had a job. It was like there was no thought process. It's just the way they operate. And I think maybe that's just Brendan Schaub has probably some of that. He just operates that way. And that's how he was able to do something like that. But super heroic of him.
I heard he was getting attacked either in YouTube comments or Instagram comments, people saying that he may have falsified some of his story. It doesn't appear so to me. But, you know what? I thought if the story comes out, I'll read it and I'll react then. But I'm not going to let somebody just posting on social media, someone I've never met, I don't follow, or YouTube create something and me spend 30 minutes trying to figure out if it's true or not. I'm just not going to do that. But I'll read the story if it happens. And like I say, I'll react with them. Probably maybe not too kindly. That would be a horrible story to make up. But for now, like I said, from what I read on MMA Junkie, shout out to Brendan Schaub. Goes, dude, you brought up Afghanistan, and I was thinking the same thing, except I was thinking a little different. The images and video of that C-17 that's trying to take off, but there's people running along, you know, on the runway, and they're actually climbing on the plane or trying to get in front of the plane or flanking the plane. I don't know the story behind if the plane took off at that moment or if it was just moving around or if it had just landed. I don't know. It couldn't have been. I doubt it was. I just landed, but I don't know that part. Right. And then, of course, you see other videos that show people falling off. I can't imagine they were still on that part where the tires are just hanging on the whole time. The plane accelerates pretty quickly. So I don't think you could do that. What I believe is probably where the tires go, there's probably a little spot in there where maybe people thought, hey, I could just go as cargo, and then either too much heat or too much cold or too much, I don't know, moving around caused them to think, I got to jump. I can't do this. So I've yet to hear what actually happened in those circumstances. There's just no way somebody thought, I'll just ride this out, you know? And wherever they land, they land. That would be crazy. I think I would. There's power in numbers. I think I would be on that airstrip just waiting to see what the next plan may be. But anyway, my point was, then a picture comes out of that C-17. They said 600 people packed in there, and I started sending a group text to you guys saying, hey, weren't we in a C-17? I remember it was a plane like that, and they're big and thick because they hold equipment and even motor vehicles. I don't think they carry tanks, but I think they carry Jeeps and those bigger trucks, you know, with whatever else, you know, all the different artillery and ammo, personnel as well. If I'm wrong and they carry tanks, okay, you know, I'd believe it because, like I said, it was a big, big-ass plane. But when you sent me that video that you had, oof, that sent chills down my spine, because that's the plane that we used to land into Afghanistan. And then at the very end, I get to see my buddy Steve Straub, who passed away a few years ago. He's in at the end of the video. So that sent another chill. If chills went down my spine, they went back up when I saw him. I couldn't believe it, man. But yeah, I do appreciate the times that we've had and some of the fortunate events, you know, in our lives that took us towards being able to do a morale visit for the military in Afghanistan and experience something like that. And then kind of correlate it with what's happening now, which is an entirely different thing. We had a great experience. The people there are obviously not, but still the just matching up the C-17 and that part, you know, it, like I say, it was a pretty emotional day for me.
I think the ride out of Afghanistan is, I think, the one that was the larger one. And then the ride in, I think, was the smaller one. But like I was telling George, if let's just say the plane, you know, they said they had 600 people in there. If ours was a little bit smaller, I would say they could fit 500 people. It wasn't that much smaller than that plane, if it even was smaller.
Well, I asked Stitch, and Stitch says he's for sure that we went down to Afghanistan in a C-17, and that plane that has all those people was referred to as a C-17.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, that's all I know. Now, Stitch was in the Air Force, and that is an Air Force plane. So when he said it, I got to imagine he probably knows that for a fact. The only thing I can think of is maybe if there's different images and whatever broadcast I was watching, maybe he got the wrong info. I believe there's something called a C-5 as well that might be bigger. But, yeah, I guess my point was more having to do with just the memory of that plane flying in. Remember when it said missile lock? So, like, we thought Top Gun, someone had locked us up as we're flying over the Himalayas, I believe. That was scary. The pilots calmed us down pretty easily there. And not knowing when we were going, that was another thing. You know, I think they woke us up at 4 a.m. and said, it's time to go. You know, we knew we always had to be ready to go, so we were packed, but they said it was time to go. And the other thing I was going to say was, maybe that was it. The landing, you know, I remember after the landing when we got off, we had to run to behind those hardened walls. You can still see those hardened walls. That's hardened cement walls in a lot of the videos that are being shown of the former Bagram Air Base that the Taliban has taken over. That kind of just gave me the chills too.
If you watch the movie Zero Dark 30, I think it's what it's called, you could see a lot of that base there.
Yeah. That base, folks, is like it was like a city when we were there. I mean, if you had got slept, right, put in a rear naked choke, and then when you woke up, you were there, it would have taken you a while to go, wait a minute, I'm not in the arena that I was supposed to fight in. You know, how did I get here? Like, just a lot of American people dressed in fatigues, obviously, and, you know, Army gear, Air Force gear. It's an air base. But I remember they had, I think, a Burger King, a Taco Bell. They had a little outside mall, little mini mall. They had a little place to worship. And, you know, you would think you would obviously know you're on a base, like, but you wouldn't know that you were outside the United States until we got in a bus and then drove around the perimeter of the base. By the way, that was a little scary, but they wanted to show us what it was like, and we did, and we obviously always trusted in them. But I remember seeing some Afghani kids playing soccer in a field not too far away. And, of course, I probably watched too many movies, too many TV shows, but I was thinking, oh, here we go. All of a sudden, someone's going to lob something our way, you know, and our Christmas is canceled. But, no, they were just playing soccer, and we did our tour around the base, and then we started in on our agenda. Our agenda was so specific. I remember it's 0600, get up.
I still have it.
Ciao. Do you?
I found it the other day. I was looking at it. It's like, it's to the T, man, like everything.
Ciao at 6:30 or 6:20, you know, and briefing at 6:45. And then the, you know, maybe the first workout or meeting general this, going to this place, you know, whatever. a little bit of free time, downtime, but always with our protective gear. I think we should probably, I have an appointment at Apple later because my computer is really, really running slow. It's bogged down. I don't know if I filled up all the memory. Nowadays, because, you know, you take your phone out and you record so many things and you forget about it, I probably am tying things up with my computer and my phone, but I need to have it looked at. But we definitely need to exchange videos because I didn't have that one video with Steve at the end, and I thought it was pretty cool. I saved it now, but
well, the
I don't, and I might have stuff you don't.
The big computer, the one that's not working, is the one that has the most things on from Afghanistan. And then, yeah, on my phone, I have some things here and there, but that big computer is the one that has the most.
Yeah. Let's pivot to another story. Mark Madsen, boy, did you see what he's gone through? You know, in his last fight, so he's undefeated, he's won, but he broke his jaw. He goes to get a surgery, and then there was an infection. He goes to get a second surgery. And then throughout these past 18 months, so recovering from a jaw, broken jaw has been a chore, obviously. His wife was diagnosed with MS. He had a water sewage leak in his house, so they had to relocate. Oh, and he also got COVID. I mean, brutal. He fights this weekend against Clay Guida. Should be a good one. We used to see this guy at the gym a lot because he would kind of do a full camp before his fights. But yeah, he's from Scandinavia. He is also a silver medalist, if I'm not mistaken, in Greco-Roman wrestling in the Olympics. So Mark Madsen, no joke. He's coming up against another wrestler, Clay Guida, who wrestled on the collegiate level. So there will be wrestling against wrestling, but it's going to be a freestyle or folk style, whatever you want to call it, versus a Greco-Roman type. Two different types of wrestling, both similar in age, though, except Clay Guida has a lot more wear and tear from MMA. Madsen's wear and tear would come from competing at international level of wrestling for so many years. This is the fight, if I'm not mistaken, on Spinning Backlick that you said is your under-the-radar fight that you're looking forward to.
Yeah, because I think they're going to cancel each other out a little bit. And I think it's the type of fight that Mark needs. He needs to be pushed this way so that we can kind of tell what we have with him. I think he can be a really, really good fighter. But I think Clay, a performance against Clay and a fighter like Clay that could push him to those limits, we're going to figure out what we really have with him. So I think it's going to be a fun fight. It was my pick, yeah.
And here's the thing, you know, that I forgot to mention. By the way, he represented Denmark. I said Scandinavia, which is Norway, Sweden, Denmark. I couldn't remember, but I just looked it up just to make sure. The thing that people forget when fighters go through this, yeah, they pulled through. We obviously hope that the wife, who will be battling probably MS for the rest of her life, can keep up the battle. The jaw's good. Otherwise, he wouldn't be fighting. He's recovered from COVID. But remember I said he hasn't fought in 17, 18 months? Guess what else hasn't happened? No income. You know? Mm-hmm. God bless him if he has sponsorship or if the wife has something or if they've prepared themselves for this. But people forget that about what goes through with fighters. And like Tatiana Suarez, for example, who was coming up on 2 years because of a neck injury. She's undefeated. She finally beat a notable name in Nina Nunes. She was Nina Ansaroff at the time. And right when she was about to fight, going up a level against Roxanne Modafferi at UFC 264, would have been a huge card. That's Conor and Dustin Poirier. She hurts her knee, and now she's probably going to be out another 9 months. You know, okay, wow, that sucks. You know, glad the neck is back. The knee is going to be stronger, but that's 2.5 years goes of not getting the paycheck.
Mm-hmm. That's brutal in a fighter's life because when you look at a guy like Mark Madsen, I don't know that his contract's the biggest anywhere where you could say, well, yeah, he's got carryover from that last fight. He's probably in that range where when you factor in your training camp, your manager, all that stuff, you're probably not taking home that much yet. I could be wrong, but I think he's one of those guys still. I think once you get past like 40 and 40 or something like that, then I think you're somewhat okay. But I think everybody below that isn't really making that much.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's going to compete this Saturday as long as nothing happens. You know, who's not competing on Saturday is Trajan Gore. In the last episode of The Ultimate Fighter, he defeated Gilbert Urbina. Stop it, folks, with the whole you're spoiling it for me. If you haven't gotten into it within 24 hours, that's your problem. But he defeated Trajan Gore with a vicious left hook in round two to cap off a wonderful season, by the way. I think we've talked a little bit more about it on Spinning Backlick, our other show on Patreon. Sorry, on Triple G Show, our other show on Patreon. But I got to say, I give the season an A. I was a naysayer of bringing it back because I'm a big fan of Dana White Contender Series. I didn't see why fighters would want to go into a house with other fighters for 16 weeks and be homesick and have to cut some weight so many times and blah, 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 when they could just wait for Dana White Contender Series. But I think there's just so many fighters that they don't want to pass it up if they're asked to go. So these that went, they represented, man. Tercios versus Hyenstan is the bantamweight final. And Gore versus
Battle.
Brian Battle is the was supposed to be the middleweight finals. But Gore is out. A meniscus injury in his knee will keep him out for about 6 months, according to UFC President Dana White. So in steps Gilbert Urbina for Trajan Gore. That's the guy that got knocked out by Gore. Yeah, it looks like it happened last Tuesday for all you newbies. But no, of course, obviously it happened. I think they recorded the show in March, maybe ended in early April. So he's recovered from that. And, yeah, he's going to go in there and face Brian Battle. Now, Goz and I were talking about this today. I don't want to steal his thunder. I'll let him say it. But he had a point. Why didn't they just postpone it? We could still have Tercios and Hyenstan. They're not calling it a tough finale that I know of. You know, it's a fight night headlined by Edson Barboza versus Giga Jakadze. But up until Tuesday's show, I didn't even know that the finals were coming up. I mean, they used to do a proper finale, you know. But in this case, this is the card. Probably some of it just has to do with the abundance of shows that we have and so much the UFC throws our way and probably how much we tune out because of everything we're all going through with COVID. But, you know, Bellator, PFL doesn't make it easy. All the other sports that have just – they've gone further by a season or – yeah, a season or two, meaning spring, summer, fall, winter, and they're just starting to catch up. This one really, really slid under my radar. But, Goz, you were right. They should have just rebooked it until – I guess Gore's ready to go. Maybe they felt like, though, Goz, 6 months is too much. Like if it was just a cut above the eye, oh, we can stitch it up. He'll be ready to go in 4 weeks, maybe. But 6 weeks or 6 months, do you really want maybe want to cap off a Ultimate Fighter that far? I don't know. I agreed with you up there, but now as I'm thinking about it, I'm not sure I'm with you. What do you think?
I reconsidered it a little bit. I just feel like because they didn't do a proper tough finale,
yeah,
they didn't have that pressure to give some sort of ending to what had been going on in the house. But the more I thought about it, it's not that much different than somebody getting hurt in the house. You know, they don't say, hey, let's give them a couple more days or anything. You just lose your spot. That might be the way they're looking at it now. Yeah. I think it's probably tough to tell Brian Battle, hey, you got to wait 6 months, not do anything. That's probably another tough thing that you got to do there. And I guess they can always fight afterwards, you know, or whoever comes out of that fight and you can do it. But I just think it's kind of a shame that you go through all that and then whoever you anoint the Ultimate Fighter may not really be the real guy. But then again, injuries are part of the show and it happens during the show. So I guess maybe I take it back. Maybe this is the way to go.
Yeah, well, I guess we agree because for whatever reason, we were actually talking about it very early in the morning, no coffee yet. So maybe we weren't thinking clearly. But, yeah, maybe if it was like, oh, he's got COVID, but he'll be ready in 3 weeks. It's no symptoms, mild symptoms, you know. Then maybe they could have been able to turn it around or maybe they would still tell us, nope, the date's the date and that's it. Perhaps. We don't know. But I guess maybe it broke my heart a little bit because the season had been almost perfect. I think I gave him an A-. I know I said letter grade A for sure. If you're only saying just pick a letter, A. And the only reason I may have said minus was I think they were a little too lovey-dovey. Hey, nice to meet you. You know I love you. Like, yeah, come on. Slow down a little bit, younger generation, with that stuff. You're my dog. All right. A couple days, you're my dog. But too lovey-dovey for me this season in that regard. Although I'd rather complain about that than, like I said, people pissing on each other's pillow or jacking off on each other's food or whatever, you know. But for the most part, you know, I thought the pranks were a little silly. But the coaches wound up nailing it. They both cared for their fighters. They built up that fight, and I got to know. I know who's fighting. High Stand. I don't have anything open regarding it. I could go to it, but I don't. I know it's Brady High Stand from Washington. He grew up with his brother, you know, picking on him, and they used to fight, you know, and he's got his mom, and they live on a farm, and he's a part-time firefighter, and he lives at the firehouse. And Ricky Turcios, and, you know, he's a deep mixed martial artist, and he prays, and he meditates, and he's spiritual, and I believe Guatemala was the where the parents were from, and, you know, Trajan Gore married with a newborn. South Carolina is where they're from. They've known each other for 6 years, I believe. Like I say, they did a good job of ingraining that in my head, and that's rare nowadays because they just churn fights after fights after fights after fights. Hell, the other day I said Congo was fighting Moldovsky because I had spaced it, and then I remembered it was actually Karatanov. I got the right region of the country or the world, but I got the wrong name. But it can really, really be difficult. But this season they did a great job of making sure we recorded that, and it's the way they featured all these guys. Battle, the same thing, Urbina. So I give them an A.
I'm giving it an A, too. I think every season of Tough that stands out for a different reason every time. And this particular year, I think the star of the show was were the fights. Every fight was pretty damn good. I think it wasn't until, like, episode 4, the coaches just didn't interact much. They didn't really say much to each other. And like I said, every show has its different thing that it brings to the table. Like Tito and Shamrock were at each other's throats from the get-go, right? Randy and Chuck were a little bit more civilized. Bisping and Hendo were at it right away, right? But this particular season, the coaches didn't really say anything to each other until about like episode 4, and they started to come around. So when you add that into the fact that the fights were pretty damn good, and now you have this dynamic that now what I think the show is meant to do is obviously put a little bit of spotlight on some of these fighters that could be the next deal, but also to sell that Volkanovski Ortega fight. And they did sell me on it. You know, this show made me more interested in that fight. I got to learn a little bit more about both of them, and Volkanovski really won me over. Like that, he just seems like a cool cat, man, just somebody you would want to hang out with, a really cool guy. And it wasn't until the very last episode that I finally started to understand a little bit more about Brian Ortega and where he's coming from. And I mean, you know, the pranks were a little corny here and there. I think they need to figure out what the difference between a prank and a joke is. I think a lot of those were just jokes. But overall, the season I thought was pretty badass.
If you came home one day starving, you haven't eaten all day, you went on a hike, left at 5 a.m., coming home at 5 p.m., just you forgot your wallet, couldn't find a place to pull over, nothing. But you walk in and you're like, smells like barbecue in the back. Who would you hope's on the grill, Ortega or Volkanovski?
Fuck. Okay. Volkanovski, only because I've seen some of the things he does, and he seems like he makes a pretty good steak. However, remember, this was more of a Brian Incorporated barbecue. I think the Pops was...
The dad stepped up, yeah. He had some nice offerings of Mexican food, those little mini tacos. He actually smashed Volkanovski's. I'm a big breakfast fan, so I was like, way to go, Volkanovski. That was one hell of a breakfast. But then Ortega had that spread, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you include Brian Ortega's dad, then I think give me Brian Ortega, because they had everything. They Pastor, they had carne asada, they even had short ribs, they had tacos, like that, all kinds of shit. Volkanovski, I think when he hit the grill, I think he did pretty good too, but But yeah, that I might have to go with Ortega and company.
But I will say this. It does look like, by the way, Volkanovski preps food and is cutting it. It looks like he's – I'm not saying he's got chef skills, but it looks like he's probably got the skills where if you said, now you go do what the Ortegas did, he probably could pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would be a fish out of water. All right, we're getting silly here. How about Bisping and Conor McGregor? Another Twitter battle for Conor McGregor. He's had one with DC, with Poirier, with fucking everybody at this point. Him and Bisping went at it. I thought, yet again, a little unprofessional. I don't know how it started, and I know Bisping can be a prick. But when I saw McGregor kind of poking at him, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but a lot of people do. McGregor is a part owner of the Paradigm agency, you know, that represents fighters and athletes. And so he was basically telling Bisping, I made money off your fights. Kind of a dick move. I got to be honest. I can applaud Conor for somehow negotiating. You know, hey, look, I'm the one that's really making this agency big. I want a piece of it. But Jesus, man, you're a part owner. Like, I don't know. Like, I just think someone in that position in another sport would act so much more cool, more like a boss, you know? And again, this is just part of the McGregor meltdown that I'm witnessing in 2021, not all of 2021, because early 2021, that was a pretty classy McGregor down in Abu Dhabi, you know, with his family, wishing the best on people, sharing some of his wealth eventually with the wrong charity, but he did. And then ever since then, you can just tell, spoiled little loser, man. He loses these fights. And a guy that used to take a loss so well has just had this horrific meltdown. So, again, I tried to look, and it looked like that was the first thing that was said was McGregor pointing that out to Bisping, and then Bisping reacted, and they went back and forth. What were your thoughts?
I'm a little surprised. I'm not understanding what is happening here, because you got your leg broken in the last fight. You lost that fight. If you're going to say anything or talk any type of smack, it's got to be really creative or really good for me to forget what just happened to you, right? And so I don't know why he's coming at so many people as if he's in a position to be laughing at other people. And the problem with his bags and all that is nobody can relate to him. So he was making fun of Bisping for flying coach, right? He's like, I fly private or whatever. But how many people can really go, that's right, we got him, right? Like, isn't the majority of the world going to go, bitch, I fly coach too. Like, what's the big deal here? I can't fist bump you on that. I don't understand why he's choosing the people he's choosing, why he's coming at him, what it does for him. He has to be able to, or maybe he can't. Maybe that's just the problem, is he has too many yes men that he doesn't realize that these are all 10-9, 10-8 rounds going the other way against him. Like, he's usually not winning these. Like, I thought DC got the best of him. I thought Bisping got the best of him. I don't understand why he's doing this. I really don't.
So I guess Bisping had backed up Cormier, because Cormier and McGregor went at it. And in that, you know, while he was backing him up, he pointed out that Cormier would rip McGregor from limb to limb. So, okay, you know, that's probably the case. I mean, there's weight classes for a reason. And so then the first tweet that I saw was from McGregor, and that's why I said it. McGregor initiated, but it looks like McGregor was reacting to that. McGregor says, but hey, 100K, 50K off the top of each fight. I used to say yoink every time it hit the account. That's him pointing out that he makes money off of Bisping, you know, when Bisping fought those bigger fights, probably when he was champion and got maybe some pay-per-view points. Then he says, let's see here, Bisping fires back by saying McGregor's tarnishing his legacy. It's okay, mate. That seems to be the general consensus these days. Don't know what's getting deleted quicker, his tweets or his legacy. That's not really a comeback about the money, but that's what he says. And then McGregor says, the only legacy I give a fuck about is the Legacy 5000 my mother flies around on. I guess that's a private jet. I've heard of Gulfstreams or whatever, Cessnas. Maybe this Legacy is another type of a plane. Bisping says, money doesn't make you a man, little guy. Besides, even if you stood on your wallet, I'd still be a bigger man than you. That's pretty funny.
Aren't these all like kind of creative comebacks? Like, I think they're pretty good. Like, Bisping's doing about as good as he possibly can in that situation.
And he doesn't seem bothered by what McGregor's saying. He's kind of almost like pivoting and just taking the bags in another direction. This one's more of a direct answer, but I think he's playing it cool in that regard. And the other one says, McGregor says, oh, you a big man, are you, bro? Uh-huh. A real man wouldn't sprint from his hometown after they come knocking on his mother's door, bro. Don't forget that one big man in the U.S. crunch time and you dipped. So the story behind Bisping was, I believe, he – well, you know, I don't know this one too much in detail, but I think what I've heard is he used to be part of a gym called Wolf's Lair that may have had some ties to some bad people. I don't even know if I officially want to call them organized crime. Eventually he broke away from them. But I don't know if he had something similar to like Dana White and the Boston Mafia or whatever they're called, or Darren Till. I think he had some guy after him in Liverpool, so he moved to Brazil. So I don't know if this is what he's referring to, but Bisping replies, I'm not your bro. And then McGregor says, oh, you a big man, are you, bro? Ah, ha, ha, a real man wouldn't. No, I guess that's the same thing. Sorry, the way Twitter's laid out is weird. Knock, knock, who's there? Not Mike. Anyway, he's just done the back wall. So I guess that's maybe Mike Bisping leaving the house and climbing over the wall, maybe. I don't know. Geez, couldn't Bisping point out welfare? I mean, if he really wanted to say, well, look, you had a pass too, you know, like, I don't know. And then at the same time, there's people way richer than McGregor. McGregor's way richer than me, but there's people way richer than McGregor, and they don't really act that way.
But I think that's what's kind of brilliant about what some of these people are doing against Conor McGregor is, you're right, they could bring that up, but they don't. They leave some things on the table. And to me, that seems more like a person that isn't as bothered by this as Conor McGregor is, right? There are other routes they can go. I think that makes you look better. I'm going to give you guys a tip. I don't know if you agree with this, George, or not, but when it comes to a beef online, especially Twitter, everything you need to say, you need to fit in one tweet. When you start putting multiple tweets, I think you look desperate in what you're trying to say. And another thing, I think you looked flustered. If we could all, if there was a camera to Twitter, I think we would all look at you like this. Oh, all, you know, like a gorilla, just all amped up. And that's exactly what you don't want. I think if you're smart, keep it short. Keep it all within one tweet. Don't feel the need to answer every fucking thing that comes your way, because you look desperate. You know what I mean? Like, you look like you're trying to make people laugh, trying to deflect.
That's what DC did, right? Didn't DC just do one, if I'm not mistaken? Then he says, get help, win a fight. I thought that was a pretty good zinger. Well, a couple of them within one tweet. I don't know if that was a follow-up or not, but.
Just keep it short. Don't pay a lot of attention to the situation. And I think you say more with that than you would if you were to sit there all day and fire back. Keep it short and let them know the reason why I am not engaging in this is because I got shit to do that's more important than talking to this baby right now. And I'm not saying that's Conor McGregor, but I'm just saying as far as what you're trying to do online, when you're sitting there and you're laying one thing after another, if I'm that person, I go, oh, man, I got this guy. He's on my hook. Right now he's on my hook.
Yeah. I would say add in a beef, or sorry, not a beef, add in a GIF. I think GIFs are good little zingers as well with the text. Those crack me up. And there's some brilliant ones out there. You don't have to, but if it's available to you, go down that road. Israel Adesanya is good with the memes and stuff, but I like that advice. All right, we got to finish up here pretty soon. Let's go over a couple more things. Here's something I caught goes. That's way out of left field. You're going to be like, why did you bring that up? But Nick Diaz is coming back in about a little over a month at UFC 266, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. That one is headlined by Volkanovski and Ortega, co-headlined by Shevchenko and Murphy, and then the featured bout is Diaz and Lawler. As I was scanning the card just to kind of see who we might want to catch up with beforehand, I saw this name, Martin Sanna. Martin Sanna is a best friend, a homie of Nick Diaz. And I've seen him fight before. I've seen him a lot around in Las Vegas. I don't know the guy. I mean, he really might be the nicest guy ever. But he's beaten Jeff Neal, you know, who's one of the top welterweights in the world. He started off 4-0, and then he lost his last couple. Now, he hasn't fought in a minute. He was, he had a draw in 2017, but it's been a while. But before that, he had two losses. But yet, he's fighting in the UFC, you know? Because, again, I looked at the card, I go, oh, he hasn't fought in a while. Another thing I remember about Martin is I think he was one of the initiators of that big fight over at Planet Hollywood. When Diaz was going at it and was getting pulled away, Sanna did this little beeline and tried to hit somebody, and Ray Sefo grabbed him and put him up against the wall. And then, of course, they fought later on. And so, like I say, might be the coolest guy ever. I don't know. I don't know the guy. That's really not my point. But my point was, coming off a draw and then two losses before that, and then respect to the four wins before that, I'm just thinking, I'm going to give a shout out to Nick Diaz. I think he said, I'm going to come back, but you're going to pay me this much and maybe another perk or two. But I think he said, put my boy Sanna on the card. Hey, man, salute to you, Nick Diaz. I think you pulled it off, because I don't think Martin Sanna would get signed coming off a draw and two losses. But he's in. And like I say, he's beaten a tough mofo in Jeff Neal. Started off 4-0. At 4-0, I think that would have been enough to get in for sure. You know, mm-hmm. But I think Nick Diaz negotiated something for his homie, and hopefully his homie lives up to it, you know, and gets a W. Now, Martin Sanna is supposed to fight, let's see, Matt Schlemmensberger. That'll be his opponent. So it'll be 4-2-1 versus 8-3. Again, 4-2-1 isn't a bad record. He's won more than he's lost. Started off 4-0. It's just what he's coming off of. Usually you don't get signed that way. You get signed coming off probably a win or even a win streak. So, but again, I only caught it because I've just seen this guy, heard of him. And I know that he pals around a lot with Nick Diaz.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. It's the only thing that really makes sense, I think. At what age?
Hopefully he wins. I'll be rooting for him. What's that?
What do you think is the official age where that guy found out, man, I got a dumb last name? Schlesenberger? What the hell was it?
Schlesenberger? Jeez.
First grade when they're reading.
Probably, yeah. By first grade, you know what? I remember first grade and everyone's got their little lunch pail and thermos. And I think you're not an asshole yet. I think by about third grade is when you start. I think first and second you still get a little pass. But I remember first grade, I don't think I had a problem with it. Everyone was just happy to be around other kids and learn and raise their hand and please and thank you and what time's recess and whatever. You're just so innocent, you know? Not mm-hmm. everyone, I realize, but I think you start turning into a little turd around third through fifth grade, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So, anyway, lastly, Gable Stevenson goes, let's expand a little bit on one of the topics from Spinning Backlick. Gable Stevenson has the UFC, Bellator, WWE at his disposal. But a lot of people don't know, he still has one more year of college eligibility. And with the new rules that focus around, I think they're calling it NIL, image, likeness, and I don't even know what the N stands for. But there are athletes, high-profile athletes, that are able to negotiate a contract to get paid. Like, I think his name's Bryce Young, went to Modern Day High School. He's Alabama's starting quarterback. Nick Saban went on record to say that Bryce Young will get $1 million in endorsements this year because of that new law or new rule that's been put in for college athletes where they can start getting a little bit of that piece of the pie. Good for Bryce Young, not hating on him at all. But the other guy, I don't know if he made a promise to his mom to get a degree or if that's something he always wanted to do. But at 21, he's already won a gold medal. He has so much time. But if he's close to one more year of getting a degree, that'll mean a lot to him and it'll probably be a lot to his kids, you know, an example that he can set to his kids. And plus, it's probably, I don't know, I would imagine he had a dream, a vision to win a gold medal. He probably had the same to win a, to get a degree. This would be a great chance to do it when you can come back and also capitalize off NIL.
I disagreed with Matt Wells and Nolan King on this because they were saying for him to go to WWE. But you don't just walk into WWE and know how to be a professional wrestler. We've seen MMA guys go into pro wrestling. We've seen some of them fail and some of them succeed. You see Matt Riddle's just now reaping the benefits of pro wrestling, but it took a long time to get to where he was, where he can actually put on exciting fights. Shayna Baszler's the same way. But King Mo, Frank Trigg, Rampage Jackson, those are fighters that had great personas in mixed martial arts. They couldn't cut it pro wrestling. You have to learn how to do it, how to take those bumps and all that. Where the fuck are you going to find the time to do MMA, learn MMA, and learn pro wrestling? Your body's going to get shot, man, doing those types of things, that kind of training. You either focus on one or the other. I'm sorry, but you can't – you're just not born knowing how to professional wrestle. If that's the case, we would all be professional wrestlers. So I don't think he can go that route. I think he's got to model basically what Daniel Cormier did. Go in, get a couple regional fights, get some experience, build up. If you watch Daniel Cormier, every fight he improved. Every fight along the way. You need something like that. You need to be with a good team that understands you too.
He'd be starting like a decade earlier than Daniel Cormier too.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, one of his mentors is Brock Lesnar. He's a good friend and a mentor. And he's already saying, I would work with Paul Heyman. I think he would have a little bit of an easier road in pro wrestling than most, including Matt Riddle. He's definitely a sizable guy. He competed at 285 pounds in freestyle wrestling. That's where he got his gold medal. But what do you think of the option of coming back one more year for college and then just seeing what the landscape looks like right now? I mean, remember, we're in a pandemic. How much is the WWE touring? I don't know. I don't follow them. Are they only doing big shows or are they still doing house shows? And could he negotiate a signing fee with the UFC or Bellator? I've heard of that before. I remember Roger Huerta was one of the early ones. Hey, Huerta, come over from the UFC to Bellator. And right away, here's just a $50,000 check to start things off. I'm sure those numbers are higher. You know, I don't know. Maybe during that time while he's getting his degree and getting some money, getting paid, he can also box for a year and see what it's like to get hit from the strikers. You know, kickboxers, Muay Thai, boxing. Just let it marinate. You know, I know you can't get the year back from competing in professional sports, but it's different now because now you can get paid. And if Bryce Young's getting $1 million, this other kid's got to get $500,000. He's the talk of the town. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he's an Olympic gold medalist. I would imagine he could do pretty good, especially if he's already being courted by MMA leagues and WWE.
Well, I think he could do more because you're a guy in a very small elite class. Bryce Young is just another great, good college quarterback. We have no idea what he's going to end up being, if he'll ever amount to anything in the NFL. I mean, how many number one picks just fizzle out? You know, there's a lot of if Bryce Young says, nah, I want $2 million, they can easily move on to the next guy, right? I don't know that you could do that with a guy like Gable Stevenson. He's elite. So I would imagine he should be able to pull in even more. When you think about like some of the endorsements that like Michael Phelps was on everything. You remember that?
Yeah.
He was on every box of everything, dude. Every commercial. He's selling you car insurance, man. That guy was all over the place.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. But I think he's got three great options, and that's pro wrestling, MMA, or just going back to school. And going back to school is a lot more attractive because of the new rules that have been instituted by the NCAA where an athlete can start making a piece of that pie based off their image and likeness. So good on him for being in the right place at the right time. The last news, and I'm just going to rush through it because we're already over. Jared Cannonier fights this weekend against Kelvin Gastelum. What I just found out was he had to have a second surgery on the broken arm. Goes, what is it with broken arms? Didn't Paige VanZant need like three or four of those? Like, you can get a lot right when it comes to the knee or, well, I take it back. I know Alex Smith went through a lot, a leg break. But I've noticed that the broken arms, for some reason, they just must not set right. Who knows? But that sucks, man. Imagine they have a surgery, go through a bunch of rehab, and then we got to do it again.
Yeah, it happens a lot in baseball, too. You know, those surgeries, shoulder surgeries, all that. Yeah, I don't know what the reason is for that, but it tends to happen a lot.
Here's how things lay out this week, folks. Tonight, it's PFL playoffs. So it's 2021 week 8. Like if you're looking on Tapology, if you go to our site, we're calling it playoffs week 2. The fights are on ESPN and ESPN Plus. So on ESPN Plus at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, you got undercard with Hanan Fajardo's fighting. He's the guy that defeated Fabricio Werdum, and then he got the win pulled from him. Carl Sumanutafa, he is an extreme couture guy from time to time. We'll see him fight as well. But, of course, the main focus is on the main card, ESPN, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Up until a few days ago, I thought I had heard that this was going on ESPN, but ESPN too. But these things seem to shift around a little bit. This is huge that they're on ESPN at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Ante Dalija versus Denis Goltsov. Taylor Guardado versus Mariana Morales, Bruno Capoloza versus Jamel Jones, and Kayla Harrison versus Jana Fabian. This is women's lightweight and men's heavyweight. These are semifinals. The winners move on to the finals. The next day on Showtime, the fights start. You can watch them on MMA Junkie at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. On the undercard, do I recognize any names? Not really. Let's skip to the main event. Sorry, the main card, which features Keith Lee versus Jornel Lugo, Billy Swanson versus Marcel Gome, Dante Shiro versus Logan Storley, and your main event is Chuck Congo versus Sergey Karatanov. Those fights are on Showtime, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Any thoughts on those cards, Jess?
I mean, PFL is going to be a lot of fun. I don't know that we talked about it on this show. Well, yeah, we definitely didn't talk about it on this show. But Larissa Pacheco, just, man, that really changes things in that dynamic. But I think that card's going to be fun.
She done fucked up, man. If she fights and wins, she's guaranteed $200,000 because that's what second place gets in the finals. Had she won and then won in the finals, she would win the million. Saturday night on ESPN2 and ESPN Plus. Maybe that's what I was thinking about. The UFC's on ESPN2 this weekend. How about that? PFL on ESPN tonight, UFC on ESPN2 this weekend. Undercard starts at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Brian Kelleher's on that card. Bia Malaki, William Knight, Roosevelt Roberts on the main card. Pantoja versus Roybal. Love it. Pichelle versus Hubbard. Love it. Trevin Jones versus. Woo! Side Yokub Kakamoranov. All right. Parker Porter versus Chase Sherman. I'm down. I like Chase Sherman, believe it or not. Mark Madsen versus Clay Guida. We talked about that earlier. And Jared Cannonier. He fights Kelvin Gastelum in the main event. That main card starts at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Lots of MMA this weekend goes. You got a parlay for us?
No, but I went heavy on Mark Madsen.
Mark Matz. Ooh, okay.
Yeah. All right. I did that a couple weeks ago before all this other news came out. So, but yeah, that's my heavy play of the week, I think.
I think if you lay 20,000 on Kayla Harrison, you win $100. I'm just kidding. But it probably is something astronomical like that. Folks, keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the weekend. As I laid out all these cards for you, just know that we got people on site. Nolan King. Sorry, let's start with Danny Segura out in Hollywood, Florida for PFL. Nolan King out in Uncasville, Connecticut for Bellator. John Morgan will be at the fights here in Las Vegas. And, of course, the staff that backs them up, they churn out stories left and right. Shout out to the video guys, Ken Hathaway and Abby Suhan. They are not underappreciated because we appreciate them. They're just not as well known as some of the others, you know, the writers that you see their byline or us that do the radio show, but they are awesome. They are warriors for our website. So please keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the weekend for the best MMA coverage. We'll see you all on Monday. We'll be recapping all of these events. And thanks as always for your support. All right, we're going to get on out of here. Enjoy the weekend. Go out there and be a champion.